International Capital Market Insights from ICMA.
Hello, my name is Nicholas Pfaff. I'm the head of sustainable finance at ICMA. I'm also managing director. It is my pleasure to welcome you today for another edition of our podcast series, which is now becoming quite long and is very informative and is available on our website. I have the pleasure of welcoming today Krista Klapp, who's the co-founder of Cicero Shades of Green. And we're going to be talking about external reviewers and their role in the sustainable bond markets and the sustainable finance generally. So we're going to be very much focusing on this exciting area where ICMA is privileged to play an important role. Krista, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Krista, we've got a long list of potential topics to cover. And I wanted to start with the basics. Can you remind us first, what does an external reviewer do, and what is the role of Cicero in this market?
External reviewers are the first check of environmental integrity in the green bond market. So at Cicero Shades of Green, we see it as our responsibility to perform environmental due diligence. And there's a lot of different types of external reviews. And at Cicero Shades of Green, we provide second opinions at the time of issuance. That includes a green rating. And we also follow up on impact reports to check against what the framework had originally promised. We see our role as providing transparency to investors on the potential climate and environmental risks and impacts of a bond or finance framework. And the second opinion is a tool for investors to consider all of the potential risks and impacts that feeds into their financial decision making. Our motivation comes out of climate science. And if you are not aware of the history of Cicero Shades of Green, we carved ourselves out of a climate research institute and still remain very closely tied. And our motivation is really to help provide transparency on green finance instruments and to help scale up green finance worldwide. And part of that is our second opinion service. And we are rather large player in the market in terms of being the largest external review in terms of market share this year. But I have to say that what we're even more proud of is being voted 4 years in a row the best quality external reviewer. And that really speaks to what we're trying to do. Our aim is to be a thought leader in this market. And we helped establish the model for second opinions at the beginning of the market back in 2008 when the World Bank issued their first green bond and we provided the second opinion. And establishing that relationship between an independent, arm's length reviewer providing transparency to the investors to aid their decisions, that has carried forward to today and is considered a best practice model for what we see in the green bond market.
Krista, that's very interesting. For our listeners who are less involved in these topics than you and me, can you explain what typically a second opinion does and what does it say?
Yes, of course. Well, what precedes a second opinion is the first opinion. And the first opinion comes from the issuer. And that is usually in the form of a green bond or green finance framework that says how they intend to use the proceeds, for example, in follow-up on reporting. Then the second opinion that we and others provide in the market comes into play by being a check against what the issuer says that they're doing and considering are the types of investments that they're planning to make what we would consider green. And do they follow the green bond principles, these voluntary principles that cover four aspects of how the proceeds would be used and managed and reported on. So we check against the green bond principles, but then at Cicero Shades of Green, we take it another step further and follow our own methodology in determining what shade of green the investments are assessed to be. So what we do in our approach is we take a look at the project categories planned for the use of proceeds. And for each project category, we look at the different context or threshold criteria that the issuer is planning to apply. And then we consider whether it would be light, medium, or dark green. And that is our sort of simplified green rating system, whereby we use dark green to indicate very close to Paris alignment. Of course, there's some interpretation around what Paris alignment means. And as a rule of thumb, we mean to imply that by mid-century, that is zero emissions in that project category. At the other end of our scale is light green. And these are deemed to be emission reductions that can be quite significant in the near or immediate term, but don't necessarily shift infrastructure away from fossil fuel use. So this could be something like energy efficiency improvements in a manufacturing plant. So we apply our shades of green to the project categories, and then we also do a governance assessment. And this is looking at the issuer's policies, targets, programs, that they might have in place in order to give us an understanding of how they are going to implement the framework. So at the time of issuance of a green bond, we often don't know the precise projects that will be invested in. What we know is the issuer has set up criteria for selecting projects. But then we go further and ask what type of perhaps corporate sustainability or climate targets might the issuer have, and how do they follow that up even down through their supply chain, so that we have more confidence in understanding how they will implement the framework in a good and robust green manner. So then we wrap up all of these project category assessments and the governance assessment of the issuer to apply to an overall green shading from us. And so our second opinion includes whether we think green bond framework is going to be light, medium, or dark green overall.
You know, and that's been very influential and interesting. And also, I think it speaks very well, you know, to not only to specialists, but also the wider public. I mean, when you're told that something's pale green or dark green, that's pretty straightforward. You at Cicero, you've also recently published a very interesting document called the sort of Best Practices 2020. What are the key takeaways from that?
Yes, we publish our best practice report on an annual basis. And what we aim to do with this report is to provide a resource for market actors, including banks or potential issuers, to showcase what kind of both best practice and interesting examples we're seeing in different sectors in hopes that there could be some replication. So we hope by showing what different companies and organizations are doing in different sectors, that then ideas could be sparked of, oh, perhaps I could issue a bond, I'm also in this sector, and label it green. So some of the interesting examples that featured in this year's report were actually a fair number of electric rail green bonds. We saw green bonds from Green Cargo, Norske Tog, and also the Swedish sovereign bond that were largely used to finance electric rail and supporting infrastructure for that. But we also saw a road transport green bond for electric vehicles from Daimler. So I hope that we will see more transportation oriented and electric vehicle and electric train oriented green bonds in the future. We had another really interesting one I wanted to highlight. I think it was one of the new movements in the green bond market this year into aquaculture. And this is an example of this is Grieg Seafood, based in Norway, although they operate worldwide and they are farming salmon. And one of the things that we discussed with them during the second opinion process was how do they reduce emissions through their supply chain. So something that I also learned along the way is one of the big emissions factors in salmon farming is the feed used for the fish that is typically soy based, and if depending where the soy comes from can be linked with potential deforestation. The case with Grieg Seafood was quite interesting because their main supplier for fish feed was Cargill. Now Cargill is actually tied with some potential for deforestation in Brazil. And what happened with the green bond framework is that Grieg really pushed on their suppliers, including Cargill, to prove that they were avoiding deforestation. And it actually came out and was covered in a Financial Times article. And I think it's a really interesting example of using a green label and the process with a second opinion provider to pressure the supply chain to be greener. So it was a really positive example that we saw in the market, how to dig deeper on a green bond framework and think through not just precisely your production emissions, but also some of those scope 3 emissions or emissions through your supply chain that you can actually pressure through the green label. And so that was part of our role in that process, was saying to Grieg Seafood that if you want to achieve an overall medium rating, which we assign them in the end, then you also have to really address these potential supply chain emissions. And they did. So that was a very interesting example that you can see also showcased in our best practices report. Lastly, there's one other thing covered in our best practices report that I think is interesting and new, and that is a new service that we are offering at Cicero Shades of Green, and that is climate risk assessments at the company level. So this is going a bit outside of the bond market and looking at the organization or company level, where are the main pressure points on climate risk, both transition risk as we transition to deeper climate policy and regulations, but also physical risk in the form of weather trends associated with climate change and their impacts. So what we do in our company level assessments is look at the revenues of a company and consider them against our shades of green, which we have now expanded to shades of brown as well to consider this transition and more heavy emitting space as well. And then we also take a forward look at the planned investments for the company, and we do a shading on that too. So this is a tool that can be useful when a company is thinking about alignment either to the taxonomy or TCFD or both, or even in the early stages of preparing for setting up a green bond framework, considering what they could carve out for a bond or a green finance framework from their full company operations.
Krista, that's interesting, and I particularly note the novelty on one, the issuer level review, and also the shades of brown. That's really interesting. I think we may be able to come back to that a little bit further in our discussion. Coming to sort of the regulatory and policy space, both Cicero and ICMA have been involved with the EU Technical Expert Group on Sustainable Finance, and especially in relation to recommendations for a possible future EU green bond standard. And in that recommendation from the TG, there is a specific recommendations for external reviewers. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first, I see this as a very welcome move. First, the transparency of setting up a more common definition on sustainable finance and more specifically through the taxonomy, but also this formalization of external reviewers and more guidance on the types of checks that we need to perform, I think is very, very welcome. There is a broad range of approaches amongst external reviewers, and I think this will help provide confidence and in the integrity of the external reviewers. Some of the challenges, though, in adapting as an external reviewer to the proposed EU green bond standard, there are ways that we will need to adapt as the other market actors are adapting as well. And some of the challenges that we're facing are first actually a data challenge. So to meet some of the detailed threshold criteria in the taxonomy requires a fair amount of data on part of the issuer. So there may be cases we're foreseeing where we don't have enough information to actually assess the thresholds. And so this does put pressure back on the issuers as well. So we'll have to work together to determine, to the best of our ability, if it's possible to use proxy information or to push the issuers to collect this information up front. There is also, I think, a second challenge, and that will be in interpreting the do no significant harm. This is a great underlying principle of the taxonomy, and I think it fits very well with the approach that we have taken as well in our second opinions, whereby we are looking at both mitigation and adaptation together. So as an example, if we have a green building that is planned to be very energy efficient, that is great on the climate mitigation goal, we also want to make sure that if it's a new building, that it's being built in a resilient way towards the increased flooding trends that we know are happening in various parts of the world. And so looking at both those criteria together is how we have been doing our second opinions since the beginning, in fact. And this do no significant harm principle really fits with that. And you know, the idea is by addressing one of the environmental principles that you're not doing significant harm to another one. So this is in alignment with our thinking, but as an external reviewer, we will be stretched in terms of some interpretation of this. It does require a fair amount of interpretation to meet this do no significant harm requirement under the taxonomy. And I think it puts more pressure on the external reviewers for this to meet this challenge in terms of making sure that we are doing a very robust analysis. And that's why this formalization of the external reviewer role, I think, is really important and very welcome. Because it will come down to a little bit of subjectivity, depending on which external reviewer an issuer is using to determine, especially meeting this do no significant harm criteria. So in fact, this formalization is very welcome and I think necessary in order to give confidence that the external reviewers are doing a good job.
Yeah, you're right, I think, to underline the taxonomy aspect and perhaps for some of our listeners, it's important to understand that the taxonomy not only does what you'd expect, i.e. set sustainability standards, but it also, as you were saying, Krista, has this do no significant harm principle. But further, there's also social minimum safeguards. So it's definitely a sustainable taxonomy, not just a green or a climate or even a transition taxonomy. The TEG actually goes as far as saying that external reviewers should be regulated. What do you think about that? Is that a step too far?
No, I think this is also welcome. It's, you know, as I mentioned before, there's a wide range of approaches and backgrounds coming into this external review space. There is also a potential for conflict of interest here as well in certain areas. I think regulating the external reviewers can hopefully address both of those points. And of course, because there is a lot of interpretation that will be necessary to interpret the do no significant harm criteria. I think this will really help tighten things up. What we're hoping for is that in regulating the external reviewers, that we'll actually see more of a focus on the environmental expertise. I know that has been proposed as a criteria, and I personally would like to see that deepened to make sure that we have reviewers in the market that have a good expertise for interpreting this do no significant harm.
Thank you, Krista. One of the comments about the external reviewer sector is that many of the participants have been quite small, and there's also a diversity in the different types of external reviewers. Now, We've seen a wave of consolidation in the last 24 months. Do you think this is a good thing?
Not necessarily, actually. It's not necessarily a bad thing either, but I think one of the things that we need to be concerned about going forward is, again, this making sure that the environmental credentials are robust. That doesn't necessarily change with the consolidation, but some of the recent consolidation efforts have taken environmentally focused consultancies and wrapped them up into a ratings agency that is focused on other financial aspects. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but then I think it's even more important that we are pushing on the regulation of the environmental integrity and also being very aware that there's a potential for conflict of interest when you have other, you know, fingers in the financial market for some of the bigger players.
Krista, coming back to the evolution of the market, we have seen after an understandable dip in the second quarter, all of the sustainable bond categories come roaring back, both green and social. And what's been particularly interesting is bonds responding to some of the economic, but also social consequences, of course, of the pandemic. What are the specific challenges for CICERO in providing reviews for these products?
Well, in response to the COVID-19 crisis, I think there's, of course, a lot of challenges in financing some of the social infrastructure that's needed and recovery response. But at the same time, it's really a tremendous opportunity to shift the recovery in a green and sustainable way. So the challenge for us as an external reviewer is finding a balance between facilitating quick recovery response and at the same time, making sure that we are not doing significant harm, for example, against some of the green aspects. So it is a balancing act. The approach that we've taken, I think, again, is, you know, comes back to this do no significant harm idea that is already embedded in some of the work that we do. So for example, for sustainability bonds, where we have the possibility for an issuer to finance both green and social projects, we look at both those green and social aspects together for all projects. And we feel that that is our job in performing environmental due diligence. At the same time, if we have a social category, whether it's in response to COVID-19 or even prior to that, it's actually important to put more weight on the social aspects and a little bit less weight on the environmental aspects, as long as we're not doing significant harm. So I think our approach fits well also for this recovery period. For example, if a bond is going to finance a hospital, then we want to make sure that if it's a new hospital building, that it's not built in the worst, you know, most energy inefficient manner. At the same time, does it really need to be, you know, a zero emissions building if this capacity is really just needed as a service for areas that are underserviced in the time of recovery or other times as well? And so there's a balance there that we strike to find, and this principle of do no significant harm fits really well with this. So basically, what we would say in that case is we just want to make sure that the hospital is not being built with the most emitting processes, and you end up with a hospital building that's going to last for perhaps 100 years at a very high emitting level. So we want to avoid that. But at the same time, we're less picky about it because it, you know, it's a social project intending to fill a societal gap. So it's the balancing act. And I think other external reviewers in the market face that same challenge: is how do we help aid the recovery? How do we help facilitate a green recovery and not at the same time slow down the ability to activate debt financing?
Looking at other developments in the market, the Green Bond Principles Executive Committee with ICMA brought out guidance for sustainability-linked bonds in June. And this represents a break from the use of proceeds approach of, you know, traditional green and social bonds, which focus on projects and assets and both in financing and refinancing them, while sustainability-linked bonds look at the sustainability performance at the issuer level. Subsequently, we've seen several transactions in the market. We've had recognition from the European Central Bank of this product for the purpose of their asset purchase and collateral programs. But from an external reviewer perspective, does this new product present specific challenges, and does it call for a new approach from you?
Well, it's an interesting new territory to be in. And I think it was, you know, it is time to offer something additional to use of proceeds bond. I think that can help scale up sustainable finance in a larger scale way than the use of proceeds bonds. So I think it's sort of a necessary new territory that we're entering. However, it does require different types of scrutiny and sort of a stepped up role from external reviewers. And the guidelines are a first step towards helping that, but again, are open to a bit of interpretation. And some of the areas that we really need to watch is making sure that the appropriate KPIs are selected. This is actually a little bit tricky, and probably the most important component in assessing a sustainability-linked bond or loan. First, you can have a KPI that seems very relevant, like emission reduction, but it might not tell you the whole story that you need to know. So as an example, I'll just go back to the Grieg seafood case that we highlighted in our best practices report, where the production emissions were not actually the most emitting factor in aquaculture. It actually comes from the supply chain that feeds stock for the fish. So what is actually important is maybe a KPI based on the percentage of suppliers that are meeting certain green criteria. So it's not always straightforward, just for example, emission reductions in each sector that are most important. Another example might be car production, where of course, you know, the emissions at the production level are important, but they also don't tell the whole story. What is interesting to see is how investments are changing over time towards increasing the percentage of electric vehicles increased. So this is the type of thinking that we go through when we're doing our Cicero Shades of Green company assessments. And this is the same type of thinking that we need to be applying to results-based financial products. So the results-based, you know, it's a very welcome movement, but we have to make sure that how we set up what we're tying those results to are really measuring sustainability in a robust way. So this puts more pressure on the company in order to showcase their ESG strategy. And this is also, you know, the type of thinking that we have in our company assessments, where we're looking at not just the carbon footprint or not just the green revenue streams today, but also forward looking. How is the company changing or what is the trajectory of their investments in the future? And how is that going to support the KPI metrics that they're selecting for the performance of this financial product? So the two things are really, you know, making sure that the KPIs are not just, you know, transparent, but that they are appropriate for measuring the sustainability in that sector. And that is not entirely straightforward. And then secondly, I think that there's some more onus on company to make sure that they're showing the direction of not just, you know, today's emissions or sustainability metric, but where they're headed in the future. So that's a lot to evaluate for an external reviewer. And I think we have, you know, a territory now that's very new in applying this guidance. And I think it will be, again, subject to who the external reviewer is. So I would like to see, you know, some follow-up in the course of the next year or two to understand how the guidance is working or areas where maybe it needs to be tightened up. And it's a learning process. So I very much welcome that we are trying these new financial products, and then we have some learning to do along the way.
Krista, thank you very much. I think this has been very informative to our listeners. I've also learned a lot. So thank you very much. And we're very grateful for you making yourself available for us and for our podcast series at ICMA.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be part of your series.
Thank you for listening to this ICMA podcast. For more podcasts and more information about capital markets, check out our website, icmagroup.org.